Hello, I'm author Carnigaldin. Welcome to the next instalment of Wolf of the Plains.
Are you finished? Ulugan asked after a time. Yesterday sensed a subtle tautness in them as one of the men moved to one side and dropped his trousers to defecate on the ground. In the wolves, we keep excrement away from the food, Yesterday murmured. Ulugan shrugged. He stood, and Yesterday rose with him. He watched in astonishment as Ulugan crossed to the steaming pile and drew his sword. Yesterday's own blade was in his hand before he had made a conscious decision, but he was not attacked. Instead, he watched Ulugan pull his blade through the stinking mass. Ulugan wrinkled his nose and raised his head to the man whose efforts had created the pile.
You have diseased bowels, Nassan. Have I told you?
You have, Nassan replied without humor, repeating the action with his own blade. It was then that Yesterday realized this was no chance meeting. When did you know me? He asked softly. Ulugan smiled, though his eyes were cold. We knew when the Olkhunut told us you had come to them with a son. We paid their Khan well to send a rider to our camp, but he was not hard to persuade. Ulugan chuckled to himself. You are not a popular man. As Yesterday contemplated his chances, he tried to keep his enemy talking. He had already decided Ulugan was a fool. There was no point chatting to a man you were going to kill, but the young warrior seemed to be enjoying his power over him. Why is my life worth sending you out? Yesterday asked. Ulugan grinned. You killed the wrong man, Wolf. You killed the son of a Khan who was foolish enough to steal from your herds. His father is not one to forgive easily. Yesterday nodded. He saw that the other three men intended to poison their blades in the same filth, and without warning, he leapt forward and struck, cutting deep into Nassan's neck. The Tatar fell with a death cry, and Ulugan roared in anger, lunging straight at Yesterday's chest. The Tatar was fast, but the blade slid along the chainmail under his deal. Yesterday attacked quickly, needing better odds. The blades rang twice, as the three others fanned out around him, and he felt the strength in his shoulders. He would show them what it meant to be a Khan of the Wolves. Yesterday fainted his own lunge, then stepped back as quickly as he could run forward, three sliding steps taking him outside the circle before it could form around him. One of the other men turned to bring a blade down in a great arc, and Yesterday stabbed him under the shoulder into the chest, wrenching his blade clear as he fell. He felt a sharp pain in his back then, but another step tore him clear, and a quick slash felled another of the group with half his jaw cut away. Ulugan pressed forward, his face grim at the death of three of his brothers in arms. You should have brought more to bring down a Khan, Yesterday taunted him. Five is an insult to me. He dropped suddenly to one knee to avoid Ulugan's cut. With a savage jerk, Yesterday managed to chop his blade into the younger man's shin. It was not a mortal wound, but blood drenched Ulugan's boot. As Yesterday came to his feet, he stepped left and then right. Movement was the key to killing with swords. Any man could heave a blade around his head, but footwork separated a man from a master. He grinned as Ulugan limped after him, gesturing for him to come closer. The Tatar nodded to the one remaining warrior, and Yesterday watched as he moved to the side to take him. Ulugan timed it well, and Yesterday did not have space to dart away. He buried his sword in the chest of the unnamed man, but it snagged in the ribs, and Ulugan struck with his full weight, punching his blade tip through the mail into Yesterday's stomach. Yesterday's grip was broken on his sword as it fell away. He felt a pang for his sons that was worse than the pain, but he used his right hand to hold Ulugan still against him. With his left, he drew a dagger from his belt. Ulugan saw the movement and struggled, but Yesterday's grip was like iron. He looked down on the young Tatar and spat into his face. Your people will be torn from the land for this, Tatar. Your gears will burn, and your herds will be scattered. With a quick slash, he cut the young man's throat and let him fall away. As he crumpled, the Tatar blade slid out of Yesterday's wound, and he bellowed in pain, falling to his knees. He could feel blood coursing down his thighs, and he used the dagger to cut a great strip from his deal, cursing the agony. Dizziness threatened to overwhelm him, but his fingers tugged the cloth around his waist and tied the knots hard and tight. He winced at the smell of human filth from Ulugan's blade. That was an evil thing, he thought. They deserved death for that alone. He wanted just to stay on his knees, with his back straight. He felt he might hold himself there for a long time and watch the sun rise. Part of him knew he could not, if Temujin was to live. He had to reach the wolves and send warriors out for the boy. With a cry of distress, he pulled himself to his feet, staggering to the gelding who watched him with the whites of its eyes showing. Somehow, he managed to get back into the saddle. He dug in his heels, his vision fixed far away on his home and his family. The plains were silver under white starlight as Temujin moved gently through the grass, careful not to alert the boy ahead. He did not know where Koke was going, and after 7 days among the Olkunut, he did not care. He had stepped out of Sholoi's ghair to relieve his bladder and seen Koke moving through the ghairs. He knew better than to lose a perfect chance. The world was asleep, and in the pale gloom, only two figures moved on the sea of grass. Koke was making for a solid shadow at the foot of a hill. Worried he would lose his prey, Temujin broke into a trot as Koke crossed the black line and seemed to vanish. Though his heart thudded, Temujin felt exhilaration as he passed into complete darkness, squinting for some sign of Koke. It would not do to stumble across some group of Olkunut boys out with the skin of stolen black arag. He heard low voices ahead and froze. With the mountain blocking the moon, he was almost blind. Then Temujin smiled to himself. Koke had found himself a girl. He could not tell exactly where the couple lay, but they were close enough for him to hear Koke begin to grunt rhythmically. Temujin grinned at the sound and waited patiently. Battles could be won with stealth as well as speed and strength. It did not take long. Temujin heard the sounds of talking once more, followed by the girl's low laugh. Then Temujin heard footsteps and held his breath. His heart hammered as the girl passed within a few feet of him. Then he stepped out into the path. He heard more steps and let the older boy come close.
Koke,
Temujin whispered. The moving shadow jumped in terror.
Who is it?
Koke hissed, his voice breaking in fear. Temujin swung his fist. It was a poor blow in the dark, but it made Koke stagger. Then Temujin was punching in a wild fury, his fists and feet connected again and again until Koke fell and Temujin knelt on his chest. His scrabbling fingers found a stone, and he felt his anger surge as he lifted it, ready to smash the life out of his tormentor.
Temujin!
A voice said out of the darkness. Temujin reacted instinctively, rolling off his enemy and launching himself at the new threat. He thumped into a small body and sent it sprawling with a yelp he recognized. Behind him, he heard Koke come to his feet and sprint away. Temujin held the arms of the new figure, feeling their wiry thinness.
Porte,
he whispered.
What are you doing here?
I followed you, she said. I thought you were escaping.
She stood, and he rose with her, unwilling to lose the closeness, though he could not have explained why.
I would have thought you'd be pleased to see me run, he said. I don't know. You haven't said a kind word to me since you came to the families. Why should I want you to stay?
Temujin blinked. In just a few heartbeats, they had said more to each other than in the days before. He did not want it to end.
Why did you stop me? Koke will run back to Enk and your father. They'll find us. It will be hard when they do. He is a fool, that one, but killing him would have been an evil thing.
In the darkness, he reached out blindly and found her arm. The touch comforted both of them.
Your brother beat him until he cried like a child, Temujin. He is afraid of you, so he hates you. It would be wrong to hurt him again. The spirit is already broken in him.
Temujin let his breath shudder out of him.
I did not know, he said.
Borte reached up and placed her hand against his cheek.
You are strange, Temujin, she said.
Before he could respond, she stepped away from him into the darkness.
Wait, he called after her. We may as well walk back together. They will beat us both, she said. Perhaps I will run away instead.
He found he could not bear the thought of Sholoi hitting her.
Then come with me. We'll ride home.
He
He listened for her answer, but it did not come. Borte? He called. He broke into a run and passed back into the starlight with a pounding heart. He saw her darting figure already far ahead and increased his pace until he was flying across the grass. He did not know what he could do, but he knew he could not let her be hurt again. Then he heard the lookouts sound their horns on the hills all around, calling an alarm to the warriors in their gares. The encampment was in chaos as Temujin reached it. Dawn was coming, but torches had been lit, spreading a greasy yellow light that revealed running figures. The warriors were already mounted and milled around, raising dust and confusion. He saw for the first time what Yesuge had seen. The Olkunut had many fine bowmen and hunters, but they were not organized for war. He saw Enk hobbling through the gares.
"He's here!"
Enk shouted, holding Temujin by the arm. Temujin struck out from instinct, shoving his uncle onto his back to break his grip. He had a glimpse of warriors moving towards him, and before he could run, he was held in strong hands and practically carried across the bare ground. They passed through a pool of torchlight, and Temujin swallowed dryly as he saw that his captors were bondsmen of the Khan, grim and dark. They threw him down at the door of the Khan's gair, searched him, then propelled him through the opening to land flat on a floor of polished yellow wood. As well as the Khan himself, there were three of his bondsmen standing guard with drawn swords. Temujin looked around at the faces of strangers, seeing anger, and to his surprise, more than a little fear. His gaze fell on a man he knew, and he cried out in astonishment.
"Basan, what has happened?"
The presence of his father's bondsman sent a clutch of fear into his stomach. No one responded, and Basan looked away in shame. Temujin remembered himself and flushed. He bowed his head to the Khan of the Olkunut.
"My Lord Khan," he said, formally.
Sansar's voice was clipped and hard. "Your father would be ashamed if he could see you with your mouth hanging open," he said. "Control yourself, child." Temujin did as he was told, mastering his breathing and straightening his back.
"I am ready, my lord."
Sansar nodded, his eyes weighing him. "Your father has been grievously wounded, child. He may die." Temujin paled slightly, but his face remained impassive. He sensed a malice in the Khan of the Olkunut. "The Olkunut share your distress. I will scour the plains for the wanderers who dared to attack a Khan. They will suffer greatly." The brisk tone gave the lie to the sentiment. Sansar glanced at Basan, who sat like a statue on his right. "It seems you will not complete your year with our people, child. This is a dangerous time, when threats are spoken that are better left unsaid. Still, it is right that you return to mourn your father." Temujin could not keep silence any longer.
"Is he dying, then?"
Sansar hissed in a breath, but Temujin ignored him, turning to his father's bondsman.
"You will answer me when I ask, Basan."
The bondsman raised his head a fraction, the tension showing. Temujin was risking both their lives over a breach of custom, even after such news.
"He was badly wounded. As strong as he is, he made it back to the families alive, but it has been 3 days. I do not know."
"It is almost dawn," Temujin replied. He fixed his gaze on the Khan of the Olkunut and bowed his head once again.
"It is as you say, my lord. I must return to lead my people."
Sansar grew very still at that, his eyes gleaming. "You go with my blessing, Temujin. You leave only allies here."
"I understand," Temujin replied. "I honor the Olkunut. With your permission, I will withdraw and see to my horse."
The Khan drew Temujin into a formal embrace, startling him.
"May the spirits guide your steps," he said.
Temujin bowed a last time and ducked out into the darkness, Basan following. When they had gone, the Khan of the Olkunut turned to his most trusted bondsmen, cracking the knuckles of one hand inside the other.
"It should have been clean," he snapped. "Instead, the bones are flying and we don't know where they will fall."
Temujin strode blindly through the gares, fighting for calm. What he had been told was impossible. His father was a warrior born, and no two men amongst the wolves could take him with a sword. He suddenly came to a halt, making Bassan stumble. "Where is your horse?" he asked his father's man. "Tethered on the north side of the camp," Bassan replied. "I am sorry to bring such news. Come with me first. I have something to do before I leave here. Follow my orders."
Temujin strode through the Olkhunut as they recovered from the sounding of the alarms. Dawn had come at last, and he saw the gnarled figure of Sholoi standing at his door with a wood axe in his hands. Temujin did not hesitate, walking up to within reach of the weapon.
"Is Borta here?"
Sholoi narrowed his eyes at the change in manner in the boy.
"Not yet, boy. I thought she might be with you. Your brother tried the same with the girl they'd given him."
"What?"
"He took his girl early, like a couple of goats rutting. Didn't he say? If you've done the same, I'll cut your hands off, boy, and don't think I'm worried by your daddy's man either. I've killed better with my hands alone. An axe will do you both."
Temujin heard the slide of steel as Bassan drew his sword. Temujin laid a hand on the warrior's arm, stopping him with a touch.
"I have not harmed her. She stopped me fighting Koke. That is all."
Sholoi frowned.
"I told her not to leave the tent, boy. That's what matters."
Temujin stepped closer to the old man.
"I've learned more tonight than I wanted to know. Whatever the truth of it, I am not my brother. I will return for your daughter when the moon's blood is on her. I will take her for my wife. Until then, you will not lay a hand on her again. You will make an enemy of me if she takes a single bruise from you, old man. You do not want me as an enemy. If you give me cause, the Olkhunut will suffer."
Sholoi listened with a sour expression on his face, his mouth working.
"She needs a strong man, boy, to control her."
"Remember that," Temujin said.
Sholoi nodded, watching as the two wolves walked away.
"I know you're here, girl, creeping around," he said to the empty air.
There was no response, but he grinned, revealing black gums.
"I think you found yourself a good one, if he survives. Mind you, I wouldn't take a wager on those odds."
Temujin heard the horns of the wolves as he and Bassan rode into view with the setting sun behind them. A dozen warriors galloped in perfect formation to intercept him. He could not help comparing the instant response with the panic of the Olkhunut. He drew his mount back to a walk and glanced at Bassan, seeing a new tension there overlaying the exhaustion. Nor had their time together begun a friendship. The warrior had been reluctant to speak, and his manner worried Temujin. It occurred to him that the Arban of galloping warriors could now be enemies. Eluk was amongst them, and Temujin saw instantly how the others deferred to his father's bondsman. It was he who gave the signal to halt, and something about his confidence brought Temujin close to humiliating tears. He had come home, but everything had changed. Eluk laid a claiming hand on Temujin's reins. The others fell in around them, and they began to trot as one. Temujin felt anger. He did not want to be led back to his father's tribe like a small boy. "Your father still lives," Eluk said. "His wound was poisoned, and he has been delirious for many days."
"He is awake, then," Temujin said, hardly daring to hope.
Eluk shrugged.
"At times he cries out and struggles against enemies only he can see. He is a strong man, but he takes no food, and the flesh has melted off him like wax. I do not believe he will live much longer."
Temujin bowed his head to his chest, overcome. Eluk looked away rather than shame him at his moment of weakness. Without warning, Temujin tugged his reins away from Eluk's grip.
"Who is responsible? Has he named them?"
"Not yet, though your mother has asked him whenever he wakes. He does not know her."
Eluk sighed to himself, and Temujin saw his own strain mirrored in the man.
"What about my brother, Bector?" Temujin said.
Eluk frowned, perhaps guessing the path of Temujin's thoughts.
"He has ridden out with the warriors to search for your father's enemies."
His face was a mask, but Temujin sensed some hidden anger in him. He did not like the thought of Bector's influence on the warriors. Eluk would not want new loyalties being forged away from him. Temujin thought he could read his father's bondsman well enough. A man would have to be a fool not to think of the succession at such a time. Temujin was almost certainly too young, and Bector was on the edge of manhood. With Eluk's support, either could rule the Wolves, but the alternative was obvious and chilling.